morning on 2FM.
2FM. Now, Sorry We Missed You is the title of the latest film from Ken Loach. He's the director who's given us The Wind That Shakes the Barley, Kez, I, Daniel Blake, Jimmy's Hall, Land and Freedom, Carla's Song, Bread and Roses, loads more besides. Well, the man in front of me now is Paul Laverty, and he's Ken Loach's longtime collaborator. Since the 1990s, Paul has written many of the screenplays for Loach's films, including The Wind That Shakes the Barley, I, Daniel Blake, and this latest one called Sorry We Missed You. As you would expect from Ken Loach, this latest movie highlights social injustice, namely the increasing use of zero-hour labour contracts in the workforce. The film centres on the lives of Ricky, a delivery driver, and his wife Abby, a contract nurse and home carer. It documents their struggle to keep life and family together under the intolerable strain imposed by lack of job security. So, Paul, you're very welcome to the programme. How are you?
Absolutely brilliant to be back in Dublin. Terrific.
Absolutely brilliant to be back in Dublin. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute or two. I want to take a look at the movie itself, which, once again, congratulations, it is absolutely powerful. What we're looking at here is a kind of a bleak drama of working class outrage in so many ways. The film is called Sorry We Missed You. And if I, Daniel Blake, which is the last one you wrote, was a man trying to get benefits after serious health setbacks and all the rest of it, take us to this one here of the four people involved. Because at the very beginning of the movie, like even when the credits are going, you get to see that this guy is a good guy, even though you don't see anything. You just hear him talking about the jobs he always had, and now he's going for a new job. Was too proud or delighted that he never had to go for unemployment benefit. And we realise this guy's a good guy. The minute the camera goes on, and we know he's good. Isn't that it? Who is he?
He's a very ordinary worker, a van driver who gets his job as a white van driver. And his name is Ricky. And he's married to a lovely woman, Hannah, who is a care worker. And really, it's a kind of an intimate portrait of just a modern-day family. They've got a 15-year-old kid and a 11-year-old daughter. And what we try and do is just see how they try to balance their lives, their work, their school, their lives together. And so it's a very kind of intimate portrait of what's going on to millions of lives across the world just now. Not even in the UK or Ireland. You know, just come back from, we did a big mass meeting the other night there in Paris, 1,100 workers. And you hear the same story again and again, whether it's care workers, chambermaids, you know, postal delivery workers. You know, it's this precarious work and people just hanging on by their fingernails.
Hold on, you make it look as though these people are good, like so many people in the past, struggling with the conditions that are there. And it's 10 times worse than anything. This is digital Dickens here. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Actually,
it's the abuses, the exploitations, the humiliations in the British labour market, and as you say, right across the world.
Digital Dickens, I'm going to steal that from you, Dave. It's absolutely excellent, because you think technology will somehow, you know, releases from labour. But what we actually see when you spend time with these drivers, you know, I went out to the depots and spoke to them at the end of their shifts and persuaded some of them to let me come with them. You know, they're tied to an app. They're tied to, they call it their gun or their scanner or their handheld device. It monitors every single moment of their lives. You know, if they're out of the van for more than 2 minutes, there's a bleep. They can follow and track them all over the place. And this is kind of relentless from the, you know, the first moment of their working day right away through. And but the great trick in all this, neoliberalism has come now to, I think it's developed itself. You know, you're of a generation, you remember Margaret Thatcher and Nicholas Ridley. They had a plan to destroy all the trade unions, and that's what they did. They picked off the weaker ones first, then they went for the miners. Then they started on a big, huge campaign of privatisation, all utilities, water, which even the Financial Times said was a total rip-off. And now we've got to the stage there where these workers, nothing could be further from their minds now is joining a trade union. And now we've actually persuaded them, and this was really key to the story in this one here. They signed a new contract and saying, you're not an employee, you are an owner, driver, franchisee, you're a warrior of the road, you're a businessman, you're master of your own destiny. And the great contract is to think, like, this is you now in charge of your life. But actually, the reality is, because they're tied to this app, they're absolutely monitored and controlled, you know, so that actually going for a toilet break and there's no time for it and they're pissing into bottles. Yeah. That's what I found with the drivers today. So they are digital Dickens.
In terms
Dickens.
Of your research, you found that. And they are digital Dickens. Okay, very good. You can steal it if you like, Paul. No problem. By the way, we are talking to Paul Laverty. The movie is called Sorry We Missed You, which refers to the note that a parcel driver would leave on your door if you weren't there, etc. Just on that note, when you mentioned Margaret Thatcher, if that's the case, where's today's Arthur Scargill?
Well, it's a very good question. I'm not a member of the Labour Party, but it was very interesting to be. There was a parallel festival alongside the last Labour Party conference called The World Transformed, and there were absolutely brilliant, radical young thinkers, and people are saying that as an alternative to this mass inequality, this digital economy, because what we've now see is an absolute crisis. I think it transcends Brexit. You know, inequality is now of such mass proportions. Even I picked up the Financial Times the day before yesterday. They are worried that the inequality is now so gross that the whole thing's going to collapse. Financial Times is exactly the same. But so there's lots of young people, I think, saying we must imagine new ways of ownership so we take back control. And I know this news doesn't get out, but the Labour Party has actually had 500,000 new members sign up. You know, there's incredible energy there. I mean, it's one of the biggest left parties in the whole of Europe, if not in the world, with 500,000 new members starting up. And I think they've got lots of ideas.
Sign up to what? To an idea of what the Labour Party used to be under Harold Wilson or something?
No, but did you listen to John McDonnell's speech? The first thing they're going to do is, you know, when workers, they're going to pass legislation taking back so many of those utilities back into public ownership.
Yeah.
They're going to throw out all that Tory legislation against trade unions, which was backed by Tony Blair. From the first day at work, they're going to increase the minimum wage for young workers, not only older workers. They're going to have a real proper living wage. And it's only a start. It's only a start. But
as you say, if the Financial Times saying it's going to implode, then something has to be done.
And even I think there's a moment of, Dave, there's a moment of great opportunity and great danger here.
Right.
Because if Johnson gets back in selling his snake oil and his lies, I think we're in real trouble, because they'll be doing deals with the Trumps of this world. We'll see environmental legislation and welfare legislation and workers' rights just disappear. So I think, and I should say, I'm not saying this as a member of, I'm not coming here as a member of the Labour Party, I'm not doing that. But there is counter ideas, and that's my point. There really are counter ideas, and there are people who are coming up with different types of models of ownership, you know, so that that this doesn't happen. Because, I mean, there's a madness as well. It taps into the whole world of ecology as well. I mean, how crazy is it? You're getting your T-shirts and toothpaste and socks and vapes and all stuff delivered by one exploited driver in a white van driving around the country. Our shops are being decimated. Our city shops are being
done. The high street is dead.
You know, and it doesn't work. It doesn't work for the work. It doesn't work for their families. No. So who does it work for? It works for Jeff Bezos and his people in Amazon. So I think people are saying, enough's enough. We have to imagine a new way. And I think really, I mean, the film doesn't, you know, it's not a solution. It's just a very intimate portrait of a family. But I hope it begs those questions.
OK, well, you say, and it certainly does, an intimate portrait of a family is what you say. You've got a father who's a really good guy. You've got a mother who's an absolute 100%, 150% saint. You've got a daughter who's fantastic as well, 11 years of age. And you've got a troubled enough son in terms of 15 years of age, mainly because of the fact that the parents, if you like, are just out working and out cold all the time. So, but I want to go to a different character in the movie, which I think is the nub of the whole thing in some ways. And that's Gavin, Ross Brewster. Is that his name? Gavin, isn't it?
He's Maloney.
Yeah, okay. Now, this guy is the guy who employs the hero of the movie, or the main guy in the movie, if you have Ricky. Okay. Yes. Now, the point about it is that in his employing, he says all these things that you say, like, you know, I thought it was my business what your man says. He says, but it's our franchise. Yes. And then, like, you know, you don't work for us, you perform for us. There's no wages, there's fees. And I'm the patron saint of angry bastards. And he has a job to do. He does it well. Mm. The problem with a guy like that is, he's not necessarily a bad guy. He genuinely believes that this is okay. This gig economy that I'm in charge of, or that I'm in charge of this product, it's working really well from my point of view. All you got to do is do your hard work and everything will be great. No.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what I said to the actor, Ross. He says, you're not a bad man. You're not the baddie in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, he's saying, we must...
By the way, I want to kill him. Yeah, well, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, well, I think that's only natural too when you see what he's doing. But from his point of view, why did he get this job? You know, he got this job again. He says, I will form a protection around my depot because I keep the little black box, the gun, happy, because you're meeting your precises, you're hitting your deadlines. Mm. And if you do that, we'll get the contracts from Apple and Zara and Marks and Spencers or whatever it is. You know, so from his point of view, he's been a decent man.
Yeah,
and if he's soft, he's going to be screwed. Let me tell you just very, very briefly. I came across this story afterwards, Dave, about Don Lane. This was a man who was a driver like Ricky. And he had problems with diabetes. So what happens is you get fined £150 if you can't find an alternative driver. That's what the system was then. And then he couldn't get a driver, so he'd find, for an appointment. He missed several diabetic appointments. Then it came up to Christmas, mad rush, you know, feeling more and more sick. He still couldn't get replacement drivers. And then after a very busy Christmas period, on the 4th of January 2018, he died because of complications with diabetes. They're like, you know, And you think, well, how can they possibly be so driven that they will do that? But they are trapped in this wheel of debt. And that is the kind of the end result of the system. So, you know, Ricky to me is no saint. I think he's just an ordinary guy. He's not particularly emotionally intelligent, but he's a decent guy. He wants to do a decent job for his family.
He's a lot more than a decent guy. He's a good guy.
You know, he is a good guy. But I mean, most of the people, all the drivers I met, most of them are like that. You know, because they actually, you see them, you go on and you spend time with them. You see photographs of their kids, you know, stuck to the front bench in their van. You know, and they're working like dogs, and you know. They're not saints, but they're just very ordinary, but they care about their family and they want to spend time with them. And so the whole film asks the question, what is the point of work if you can't see your children, you can't look after your children?
Well, it's not even that. I mean, the dehumanisation, the systematic dehumanisation, I should call it, of those struggling to survive in the meat grinder of the capitalism that we live in these days. Post-crash 2008, that's why, like, they were getting the house. Yeah. And they were nearly there with their house and they lost the house because of that.
Really important point. Absolutely bang on, because their life had been transformed if they had been 2 months earlier and got their mortgage. Now you're into a system where so many people now, they're not building enough houses. You know, it's now into private rented, insecure. And they've been moved on, and it's taken up the majority of their income, and they've been absolutely screwed. And I hear it's the same in Ireland now with homelessness as one of the biggest problems.
Absolutely no question about it.
With ghost estates, well, we have to.
But let's take a look at this. The fact that we all accept, if you like, these volatile working conditions that we live in. Could I go as far as to say is there aren't necessarily really bad people there? It's the regime.
It is exactly the system which has been sold to us, been celebrated. Which has been lionised, and it's that whole narrative which I think is really at the heart of the problem. You know, we've been told there's no alternative to neoliberalism. That's what they've told us. You know, the world of business is good for us all. We're all in this together. That's the grand lie. And now I think now we're coming to the, I think we're coming to an end game, because even now with the crisis, you know, with ecology, we see what's happening in Brazil, extracting, you know, more and more, you know, of our Amazon. We're saying if we don't deal with this now, we're going to be in deep, deep trouble. There are already environmental refugees. So now I think we'll come to say, this is bullshit. This is a lie. We can't swallow this narrative any longer. You know, what is good for Jeff Bezos isn't good for our communities.
Indeed, right. And if we're talking about the dehumanisation of both, you know, the mental, the physical health, the toll it takes in this movie on the characters, it really is both completely, no question about it. The compassion that you would have to have when you're writing this. By the way, we are talking to Paul Laverty, who is the writer of the movie, and it's a great movie. It's called Sorry We Missed You. Just the whole idea of having compassion. When you write this and are angry about the characters that you write, and you let the anger just flow through normal people as you see it, the compassion is the one thing you want to get across in terms of the fact that if the regime doesn't do it, at least you can do it with your pen.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the research for this, speaking to the carers, speaking to the drivers, you know, I actually met remarkable people. You can't copy a screenplay from the street. But, you know, the kindness of some of those carers I met in particular were actually mind-boggling.
Well, what's the line of the movie? Hold on, let me try and get this right. You treat everybody that you have to go and see like you would your mother.
Well, that was a line I heard from a carer.
Was it?
You know, like, so...
Another one is, you know, whatever happened to 9 to 5 or the 8-hour day?
Oh, well, yeah, that's long gone for them. You know, it was amazing. But you see how these carers are treated. There was actually one carer, Dave, I must tell you this little story. It was absolutely remarkable. So, you know, during the middle of the morning or in the afternoon, you know, it's dead time for them. They're not getting paid. There's not enough time to go back home. They were hanging around, you know, bus stops or whatever. Yeah. They actually met in this cafe, you know, just to meet and talk to each other. And the company banned them from doing that, because they didn't want them talking to each other and finding out how their stories were. So they were more isolated. I mean, it's their time, but that shows you how vulnerable they are. And that's what happens when there's no trade unions. But some of those people were great. And the great tragedy is many great carers have been forced to get their jobs because they couldn't pay for the travelling time and keep their families together. And then, of course, I met this one young carer. She showed me her phone on her day off. She had 37 texts in one day begging her to come in.
Yeah,
I mean, what a way to organise a system. You know, you're talking about some of the most vulnerable clients.
Begging
really
her to come in
jobs.
From those in charge, or begging her to come in from the people she would have been going to
visit? No, from the company.
Oh, the company, yeah.
Yeah, because again, it's all precarious, it's all zero-hour contracts, you know, and so the people were just turned on and off, you know, like a tap.
The whole idea of the direct linking, if you like, of the political to the personal, that's just from the beginning of the movie to the end, isn't it? If you don't get that message, if you don't see what's going on here, this is an example within the system.
Well, what we're just trying to do is just see the end consequence and how it plays out in one family. And everything that happened to that family was truthful. And that's what's happening to millions of people, not only just here in the UK or in Ireland, but around the world as well.
And like, if it is a film in some ways about some sort of guilt, around like the little bits of guilt, I mean, certainly guilt with a small g from the father's point of view, and he doesn't need to be guilty at all.
Yeah. Well, that's the system's great. I mean, that's another great part of this great narrative is, you know, if you're not a success in this world, it's your fault. Mm. You know, and this, all the opportunities that we have, if you're not a millionaire, it's not your fault. You're not working hard enough, or you're not
well, actually
enough.
I'm going to play a scene from the movie right now, just before we go into some last bits talking about it. By the way, the movie is Sorry We Missed You. Paul Laverty is the man here that we're talking about in terms of writing so many of Ken Loach's movies. By the way, did I even say Ken Loach in the last half hour? I'm not sure that I did.
The great Ken Loach.
At the age of 206, what's he up to, for God's sake?
He's only 83.
He's a young man.
We did this meeting in Paris the other day with in front of 1,100 people. He's as sharp and has got as much energy as ever.
Alright, I'm going to play this scene now where the father in this case is taking out all these spray paint bottle things for people who do graffiti from his son's bag, and the two of them have a conversation with each other just about where they are in life, if you like.
Have you been in school today? I don't know what's got into you, I really don't. You used to be in all the top sets. What is going on? Just give yourself some choices, mate.
Seb, we've talked about this. You could go to uni.
Go to uni? What, and be like Harpoon's brother, 57 grand in debt, and what, working in the call centre now, getting smashed every weekend just to forget his problems?
Yeah, but it don't have to be like that, does it? There's some good jobs out there.
Good jobs? What good jobs?
Well, there is, if you just knuckle down. Yeah, otherwise, you're just going to end up like...
Well, what, I don't like you? Know.
There you go. That's a scene there from the movie. Paul Laverty wrote the movie. It is called Sorry We Missed You. I'm beginning to see, when I see movies like this, and I, Daniel Blake, which was powerful as well, they're like, you know, I think it must be really easy to act, because all of these people have never acted before.
Oh, Dave, we'll get you in the next one, mate.
And they get you right in your head. I mean, like, acting must be simple, is it? Because they're powerful, you know?
Yeah, well... I think Ken is an absolute master of just finding and choosing people, you know. So I have the privilege to do this with him, and along with Colleen Crawford, who's our casting director. And what we try and do is just find, Ken always says, just try and find the person who can best give life and blood to the character as imagined in the screenplay, you know. And sometimes, you know, they're really well known actors. I mean, Cillian Murphy and all those wonderful actors we had in the Wind Shakes the Barley, or in Jimmy's Hall. You know, we found some absolutely brilliant professional actors, and they were the best people we could find. But within this particular story, in this family, you know, we found Debbie, and she was a teaching assistant. But when she came in, she just had something. You know, that there was a kind of something that she could communicate. And I think, you know, because of her work and how she knew how adolescents were, you could see she had a great hand with them. She was kind of emotionally intelligent. And in real life, she's a remarkably kind person.
How many of the things is she allowed to do when you see this? Like, for instance, there's one amazing scene where she finally, if you like, loses it. Mm. And it's absolutely fantastic. But the one, you just hear her sing it twice in front of a bunch of people going, what the hell is wrong with her? Just the great line of, you know, I never use bad language.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's how we imagined the character, you know. And the lovely thing about the way Ken works and giving actors this confidence, you know, I mean, that was in the script, but you think you're hearing it for the first time, you know. And I think Debbie did herself proud and did us proud, and I think she seems to be communicating very well with the audience. They seem to just get her and be touched by her.
And also, let's go with the 11-year-old girl as well. Yeah. I mean, what's her name?
Katie Proctor. I
mean, Katie Proctor, that's right. We have a Kate Proctor who works here in 2FM. We do. Katie is fantastic. And in fact, the most harrowing or the most Kleenex, quick, give me one now scene in the movie.
She was an amazing kid.
Is her little revelation that she says at the kitchen table.
Yes, right. You won't spoil it.
Oh, no, I'm not going to spoil it.
I know you won't. But she was a remarkable kid.
These are people, and there are so many that you've met in terms of your research for this movie, who are trapped by the only system that allows them to survive.
Yeah, I think they're all exactly like that. They're tied up and they're trapped. And there's so many people now. I mean, all the statistics are there for us to see. Trapped in precarious work with zero contracts, no secure contracts, or the gig economy. And we know who that benefits, and it's not the families and the communities of the workers.
Right, indeed. And finally, just the agricultural revolution, we had the industrial revolution. Now we don't have the technological revolution, we have the information age. And there are those people in all that who know how to make every single penny out of everybody else, and there's some cracks going to appear.
Well, I mean, David, we live in a world where eight men control 50% of the world's wealth. I mean, has there ever been a moment in history where there's been such, you know, grasping greed? And we really just have to change it. So we have to take the algorithms back and start using them for the community. And we have the creativity and the power, and we have to have the confidence, and we have to have the bravery and the imagination to create new ways of living our lives.
Okay, well, Paul Laverty, this is the kind of movie that will wake a few people up, all right. Sorry We Missed You is what it's called. It's absolutely great, well worth seeing. If you saw Daniel Blake, you'll know what I'm talking about. Absolutely brilliant also. Paul, thanks so much indeed for dropping in to talk to us on the programme this morning.
A great pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
Dave Fanning on 2FM. 2FM.